The Bob Siegel Show on KCBQ is sponsored by Bob Siegel.
The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by Primetime Advertising Corporation and the law offices of Matthew Simone. The views and opinions expressed are solely those of the host and guests and do not necessarily represent KCBQ or its sponsors. It's time now for the Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist, Bob Siegel.
And this is Bob Siegel. So, you'd like to believe in God, but you keep hearing Christians talking about how we are living in the end times, that final generation, which will witness the second coming of Jesus Christ. What does the Bible actually say about the end times? We'll discuss this provocative topic and many other good Bible questions today, but first we do have a few other subjects to explore. For example, Miss Sarah Palin is in the news again, Mrs. Sarah Palin, I should say. I discussed the most recent round of Palin accusations, and you won't believe them this time. I discussed them in a Washington Times interview last week. Let's listen in. Welcome back. This is Bob Siegel filling in again for Rick Amato. I'm pleased to talk for the second time I've talked to her. I'm sure Rick's talked to her a lot. Jennifer Harper, Inside the Beltway columnist and media reporter for the Washington Times. Jennifer, welcome back to our program.
Oh, it's always good to be with you.
How are you?
Very good, thanks.
So, our friend Sarah Palin's getting in trouble again, huh?
Well, this seems to be the perennial parlor game, the big sport among certain political groups out there. They just cannot stop bashing Sarah Palin.
Is she going to become the new George Bush? Every time somebody gets a flat tire or their Slurpee evaporates at 7-Eleven, they're going to blame Sarah Palin?
That's about right. You know, blame her first. I mean, some of the insults are going off the scale. I mean, when you begin saying, well, does she have implants and her eye color has been airbrushed? These type of insults, and they're public insults coming from news organizations, which really ought to know better. And most of it was prompted this week by the early release of Mrs. Palin's next book, which is called America by Heart, Reflections on Family, Faith, and Flag. I mean, what could be more down-to-earth than that? She looks very pretty on the cover. It's definitely not provocative, but the advance image that her publisher HarperCollins put out there this week just brought in this huge onslaught of criticism. It was quite striking.
I imagine reviewers all over the land wrote their reviews long before reading the book.
I have a feeling that you're exactly right on this, and I did talk to a marketing expert who is the gentleman who coined the phrase for Bill O'Reilly's show, the Spin Zone. Now, this is John Tantillo out of Manhattan. I said, why is it that these folks just keep on beating up on Sarah Palin? And he says, oh, it's very easy why they do that. She's not Ivy League. She's not the intellectual. She's not a product of Northeastern establishment schools. And therefore, they just don't like her.
Well, and she has the audacity to be a liberating woman who's a conservative. Conservative women aren't allowed to be in leadership. That's only for women that are pro-choice and pro-gay marriage and the whole nine yards.
Right. I mean, people cannot get their minds around the idea of a conservative feminist, although I have to say I stumble over that title myself. I think that Mrs. Palin is way more than that and is going to teach us a few things about the culture.
Well, Jennifer, would you say the word feminist has changed definition over the years? Because there was a time when I think we could have embraced that word. All of us would believe that women and men should have equal pay, that women should vote. But these days, there are just certain politically correct issues that if a woman doesn't latch onto them, it's like she's not allowed to call herself a feminist.
Right. I would totally agree with that. And certainly when Mrs. Palin spoke out about that, this is shortly before her talk about Mama Grizzlies, The old school feminists definitely took issue with her, and certainly it has become a politically charged term that was perhaps not what the folks back in the 60s ever knew was going to erupt out of this. You know, they were definitely looking for equal pay for women and a whole bunch of sexual liberation and all that kind of stuff. That was part of the 60s, and these days it definitely is a work in progress.
Can you just imagine if some of the accusations that have been made about her and her family had been done to Hillary Clinton?
Well, we certainly saw a beautiful, fabulous, endless coverage regarding Chelsea's wedding. Now, it was a very nice wedding, and certainly I think the nation wishes her well and that she did have a nice wedding. But there have already been studies coming out to reveal that the coverage was astonishingly positive towards that wedding. It was called the Camelot on the river up in New York and so forth. So definitely.
I don't care that they spent several million on the wedding, but I hope they'll stop lecturing the rest of us about how evil it is to be rich. That's my only point.
Yeah, definitely so.
Now, getting back to Sarah Palin, I could care less if she's had breast implants. I could care less if her eye color has changed. But having said that, I'm guessing that none of these things are true anyway.
Well, and it's
odd because...
Or at
least they haven't backed it up with anything.
Yeah, I mean, if you see this image of her on this book... you know, what's not to like? She's good, very, looks very sincere, very friendly, welcoming. I mean, that's just the type of calm presence that I think that a lot of Americans are looking to and hoping for as we go forward, because things have become so chaotic, and certainly the political discourse has become chaotic, and it's very hard for people to follow it in this day and age. And part of Mrs. Palin's appeal is that she, as my marketing expert, Mr. Tantillo, said, she doesn't write 10,000 words on global warming. She comes up with five terse and very pithy talking points, and Americans can identify with that.
Yeah, now, I know that the conventional wisdom in some circles is that her endorsement for a candidate is the kiss of death. Jennifer, am I missing something? I'm not noticing that at all.
Well, I think that certainly that was the invention of somebody in some news organization, and it got mixed up into the great feedback loop in the liberal side of the media. But I'll tell you, in my column tomorrow, Inside the Beltway at thewashingtontimes.com, I'll be revealing a lot of new figures from the Tea Party. There are two huge, enormous, very significant Tea Party polls about the Tea Partiers. They actually interviewed Tea Party members for this, and they're finding that Sarah Palin is still ranking at the top of this very diverse and very active group. And a big takeaway number on this is 97% of these heartland activists voted for President George W. Bush back in the day, but now only 51% of them are affiliating themselves with the Republican Party. So this is a very evolving group as we head towards November.
Do you think she has any chance in 2012? I hear, even just amongst Republicans and conservatives, I hear very mixed opinions about that.
Yes, it's definitely mixed opinions, because she hasn't given us a really clear idea. I mean, a lot of people would fantasize that, oh my gosh, it would certainly make the race incredibly interesting and motivate a lot of people to become politically engaged. But I think it's really too early to tell, but I think she's probably building towards being a viable candidate. Otherwise, she wouldn't be so much in the public light.
You know, I'll bet if she debated Obama, she would just clean his clock.
That would be a...
She cleaned Biden's clock, even though, again, the reviews of that debate were written before people watched the debate, so we didn't read that report in the media. But Biden lied something like 14 times in that debate.
Right. And, you know, one more about... I wanted to share with the listeners that Pajamas Media, that is an interesting online group, has also come out with their own Tea Party poll, and they are finding that this is 1,000 likely voters that they talked to. They found that 54% of them actually support the Tea Party movement, and 48% said they would vote for a candidate who also supported the Tea Partiers, and 31% of Democrats even said they supported the Tea Party. So it's interesting to watch this evolve as a very grassroots heartland movement that appeals to a wide swath of people.
Well, that's pretty amazing. amazing, considering that the Tea Party is nothing but a bunch of white racist males.
Well, you know, they also addressed that in the Pajamas media poll to find that 55% said that those charges of racism against the movement were, quote, politically motivated. So there's more to come on that. This is something that a lot of Americans are watching very intently.
Well, you know, Jennifer, the Tea Party that I host once a month as an MC is in a little town called Ramona, California, and it's run. Their chairman is an African American. So when I hear these things about how they're all a bunch of racists, it's just such a joke.
Well, it certainly is interesting. Another thing I'm following also is the development of the Ground Zero Mosque.
Oh, yes. In fact, my next guest is going to talk about that. But let me get your thoughts on that.
Well, you know, surely that this is bringing out a lot of very raw emotions on both sides. But the most significant thing that's happening with that is that a lawsuit has been filed already to try to block the New York Landmarks Commission's decision that is essentially paving the way for this Ground Zero Mosque to be built. So that has just been filed today, and it's certainly going to bring out some visceral emotions. They're saying that this decision could do more than the terrorists ever did down there. So,
well, I think it could, because in the religion of Islam, when they put up a shrine over a place that had once been a victory to them, it's considered a sign of victory. That doesn't mean every Muslim in the world would interpret it that way, but many of them would.
Yeah, indeed. And a lawsuit is certainly going to take the news story forward. This was being filed by the American Center for Law and Justice, and they filed what they call an Article 78 petition in New York Supreme Court. That was today, and they are alleging that the action is a abuse of discretion in the commission's decision, and just saying that the city has rushed to push this decision through for some reason.
Well, I'll tell you what, when Saudi Arabia puts up its first synagogue and its first church, then maybe we can discuss for mosques over here.
That's been brought out a lot.
Yeah. Have you ever seen the movie, getting back to Sarah Palin in the 1 minute we have left, have you ever seen the movie The Blind Side that was one of the Academy Award?
You know, believe it or not, I go to see so many action movies that I didn't see that one.
Oh, I can appreciate a woman who likes action movies, actually. But, you know, this woman was a Republican. She was a gun owner. She was a conservative. She was a Christian. People in Hollywood just loved her, but I just described Sarah Palin, even though the woman went by another name in the movie. It was somebody just like Sarah Palin, which just shows, I think, that people are reacting to her name, and they don't really know anything about the poor woman.
That's very true, and certainly they will often buy into a lot of the short speak that is out there in most of the liberal press about Mrs. Palin, that, you know, they'll go, oh, she's a moose hunter, and she's a this, and she's a that, and they overlook the fact that she was the governor, she was a mayor, she has a lot of very viable political experience.
All right, well, we're out of time, Jennifer, you're a delight.
That was my interview from Washington Times Radio's Inside the Story, but right now you're listening to The Bob Siegel Show. Our theme, Christianity and its relationship to politics and pop culture. And have we got some pop culture for you? Are you getting frustrated when your liberal friends argue with you and call you those mean and nasty names? Well, cheer up. Your old pal Bob's going to teach you how to converse with better skill. Your friends will be amazed and astonished. Honestly, it isn't really all that hard. The trick is to show your liberal sparring partner that he not only disagrees with you, he also disagrees with himself. Observe the following sample conversation on a new Bob Siegel Show feature called How to Argue with a Liberal. Conservatives are all racist. You're also filled with hate.
Quite an accusation. Why don't we take them one at a time? What makes you say I'm a racist?
Well, you don't like Obama, and clearly the only reason you don't like him is because you can't handle having a black president.
Really? There couldn't possibly be another reason? I don't suppose you would be open to the fact that people just don't like his policies.
Bull. Bull. It's only because he's an African-American, and you know it.
Well, let's put that on hold for a moment. You also accused me of being hateful. Why? Please be kind enough to provide me with an example.
The example is obvious. You say you believe marriage should only be between a man and a woman? That shows intolerance and hate toward gay people.
How interesting. You are aware, of course, that President Obama has said the same thing.
What? What are you talking about?
With God as my witness, he said exactly that, and the words are still recorded. Just do a quick Google search. He said it while running for office. Maybe he was only being political, but he did say it, and he hasn't taken it back. Whatever he may also tell us about Proposition 8, President Obama went on record to insist that personally, he believes marriage is a union between a man and a woman. So is President Obama filled with hate? Well, let me just ask you this. Do you agree with the president's position on marriage?
Assuming you're telling me the truth, assuming he really said those things, then no. I don't agree with him on that particular issue.
You don't? So then clearly now, the only reason you can possibly be critical of this president is that you are a racist who cannot handle a black man in the White House.
Yeah, well you're ugly.
This has been a lesson on arguing with liberals. Stay tuned for further lessons on arguing with liberals. Fortunately, most Americans still love our traditional values. One wouldn't guess that when listening to the media or visiting our college campuses, but it's true. It's really true. All kinds of people love this country and enjoy this country.
Hey, y'all, crank that fiddle, turn the bass drum up. Let's meet in the middle at the honky-tonk, way down by the river, because we're loud, proud, redneck, raising hell.
As if you haven't figured it out by now, Bob is mildly opinionated about the ultimate issues of life. But Bob also respects the opinions of others. To offer your own viewpoint or to challenge Bob with a thought-provoking question, give us a call at 1-888-344-1170. 1-888-344-1170. You can also reach Bob through Facebook, Twitter, or questions@bobsiegel.net.
Welcome back to our program. After 9/11, Islam became the politically correct religion. Nobody seemed too concerned about offending Muslims or offending any religious group on September the 10th, 2001. It took slamming planes into buildings and a series of beheadings for us to learn the lesson that most Muslims are peaceful, and therefore those of us who speak out against the violent ones are perpetrating false, unjustified fear. We already knew how much the spineless government cowered down in England, where public schools no longer talk about the Holocaust because it offends their Muslim population, which does not believe in the Holocaust, and where a man was thrown in jail for telling his Muslim neighbor that Muslims were responsible for the destruction of the World Trade Center. I can only imagine where he got an idea like that. Well, lest I sound like I'm picking on merry old England, feast your eyes upon the latest news from that brave colony which fought for independence and broke from England long ago. Sturdy, sensible America. You're not going to believe this story, folks. A New Jersey judge, Joseph Charles, refused to sentence a Muslim man accused of raping his wife, not because there was no evidence that he did so, but because the man's religion teaches that a wife cannot refuse her husband's sexual advances. Now, before I continue, for those who think it's only a few loose cannon terrorists who hijacked the otherwise beautiful teachings of Muhammad, Muhammad himself taught that a wife may not deny sex to her husband. Here's a quote. If a husband calls his wife to his bed and she refuses and causes him to sleep in anger, the angels will curse her till morning. Those are the words of Muhammad. Well, maybe poor Muhammad was taken out of context. We wouldn't want that. We should give him a chance to clarify. Let him clarify it with these words. By him in whose hand lies my wife, a woman cannot carry out the right of her husband until she carries out the right of her husband. Actually, that says she can't carry out the right of her Lord or God until she carries out the right of her husband. Muhammad continues and says, and if he asks her to surrender herself, she should not refuse him, even if he is on a camel's saddle. And now, centuries later, here are the words of Judge Joseph Charles. He says, this court does not feel that under the circumstances, this defendant had a criminal desire to or intent to sexually assault or to sexually contact the plaintiff when he did. The court believes that he was operating under his belief, that is, as the husband, his desire to have sex when and whether he wanted to was something that was consistent with his practices, and it was something that was not prohibited. As you can see, the politically correct and the radical Muslims make strange bedfellows. No pun intended. This is what happens when we use terms like hate crime instead of just crime. Now a judge is going to examine the motive for violence. And if the motive happens to be religious, so be it. Fortunately, an appellate court overturned this idiocy. But why isn't that Jersey judge put away in a padded cell for life? They get appointments for life. I think he should be in a padded cell for life. Meanwhile, those of us searching for a grain of sand's worth of consistency remember another interesting New Jersey case where the rights of Christians were not viewed with quite the same respect as Islam. So let me see if I'm understanding how it all works together. When a church in New Jersey refuses to allow a lesbian wedding ceremony on its property, the church is sued, and the lesbians win the lawsuit. But if a man wants to rape his wife in accordance with religion, that, of course, is his sacred right. My friends, weep for America. Pray for America. Do it while there still is an America. Another court assault on America, of course, and this one is far more highlighted in the news than the story I just shared with you, is Proposition 8, which we talked to in detail with an attorney last week. Now, let me say, I respect the differing views people have of Proposition 8. I honestly do. But wherever you stand, I would think the fact that one judge overturned the will of some 7 million people might cause you to stop and wonder if we are really the combination republic democracy that we once were. Usually people aren't bothered by a judge's ruling when they like the ruling, but shouldn't the death of democracy concern all of us, regardless of the catalyst subject? In any event, I wrote an article a while back for San Diego Rostra, and it's been reposted to my website. It shows how it was never the intention of our forefathers that the Supreme Court interpret the Constitution. And it traces the history of this practice, which now seems to be holding us hostage. You can find this on my website, bobsiegel.net. Just click into the articles section and use the convenient search engine that we have there for you. The article is entitled Mythology. It is the job of the Supreme Court to interpret the Constitution. I want you to read this. Don't make me come over there. Don't make me come over to your house and read it to you myself, okay? But history also gets interpreted along with the Constitution. Whenever people tell me how stupid George Bush was, even though the guy graduated Yale, I always ask them for an example. Well, inevitably, the topic switches to Bush's poor communication skills, how he mumbled, bumbled, and stumbled his way through his speeches, unlike that smooth, polished Obama that made women faint when he talked. Indeed, Bush is often accused of being an embarrassment to our country. Let me say something here. As a public speaker, the topic of effective speech is naturally of great interest to me. I always get great feedback for my speaking ability. People may like what I have to say. People may hate what I have to say, but the style itself is respected. And so as one who talks in front of an audience, as one who is himself considered polished, let me say for the record that human beings severely exaggerate charisma and rhetoric. Far too often, I've delivered an entertaining and well-received address only to later discover, upon better information, that I was dead wrong about some of the actual facts being communicated. But when I think of Obama's bold-faced lies, when I think of Obama's shipwrecking Marxist agenda, I believe that history, should Western civilization survive, will paint George Bush in a much better light, namely a president appreciated in a belated manner. Make no mistake, Obama is far more of an embarrassment in what he eloquently says than anything George Bush ever stumbled over. At the end of the day, I'd rather have rusty truth than polished lies. Speaking of lies, I hope you've been following that story of the serial killer in Michigan and some other places out east. First, we were told that the serial killer who murdered so many people in Flint, Michigan, was undoubtedly a white man motivated out of racism since so many of his victims were black. Then it was reported that the man is an Israeli citizen named Elias Abulazam. Conveniently omitted from most news reports, not all Israelis are Jews. Did you know that? Most people equate the term. There are many Arabs who live in Israel as Israeli citizens, with all the rights of citizens. And as it turns out, Abulazam is one of them. But the BBC, notorious for its biased anti-Israeli coverage, used the headline, "Israeli man held in airport over U.S. serial stabbings." The accompanying narrative described the suspect as an Israeli citizen, failing to mention that he was Arab. MSNBC's online report wasn't much better. It read, "Israeli held in investigation of serial stabbings." Four times the Israeli heritage was mentioned in the article, never with the qualification that he was an Arab Israeli. NPR also reported that the man was an Israeli, leaving out the Arab distinction. At least ABC News identified the suspect as an Israeli Arab early in the report. Now, let me be clear here. In most circumstances, of course I don't consider nationality or race to be important where violence is concerned. I mean, if the man is a killer, he's a killer. That makes him evil, whether he's Jew, Arab, or any other race. Still, these days, there are two important reasons for offering as much detail as possible. Reason number one, the world doesn't need much excuse to advance anti-Semitism, does it? So when somebody is merely described as an Israeli, the fact that he isn't a Jewish Israeli is important to anyone who fears a fresh round of pogroms. If the same newspapers quick to question racism due to the amount of slain African Americans now want to do an about-face claiming the Arab identity is unimportant, they will have some inconsistent actions to explain. One would think that people concerned about bigotry would want to avoid any fuel for Jew hatred fire. This fear is vindicated in a report from Camera Snapshots. Let me read it to you from Camera Snapshots. Although one could reasonably argue that the alleged perpetrator's ethnicity is not relevant to the story, when media sources with a record of biased coverage of Israel omitted mention of the suspect's Arab background and headlined his Israeli citizenship, the result was misinformed and bigoted commentary by readers. The assumption for many news commentators was, on the basis of such reporting, that the killer is Jewish. The reality and prevalence of this misperception was quickly apparent in a deluge of virulent anti-Israeli and anti-Jewish talkbacks on blogs and news sites. Now, here's another reason why it's important to give detail. Since, despite the insistence of the Obama administration, we are in the midst of a war with militant Islam, the Arab identity may have hypothetically been the beginning of a terrorist connection discovery on the part of the media, if they were interested in doing their homework instead of being politically correct. Now, I want to be honest here. As it happens, Elias Abulazam is a Christian Arab. He is not a Muslim Arab. Possibly this distinction was the only thing eventually freeing up our media to admit any Arab ethnicity at all. Meanwhile, we still seem to know very little about this fellow, very little about his motive, and new facts keep morphing the story with every waking hour. Should it turn out that this Christian Arab ever converted to Islam, watch for much of the media to kill the news completely or bury it on the back page. I don't mean to be cynical, but they've already muffed up this story several times, so I'm maintaining a wait-and-see attitude. I'm also waiting to see what happens to Harry Reid. Harry's in the news again. Good old Harry. Harry Reid has explored the idea of opening his mouth once again to see what pops out. Now the future ex-senator says he doesn't understand how anyone of Hispanic heritage could ever vote Republican. Well, here's what I don't understand. I don't understand how anyone, Hispanic or otherwise, could ever vote for a man like Harry Reid. And here's hoping that come November, there will be a whole lot more people failing to understand that. And here's one thing more. I thought lumping all people into one basket, assuming they will all think the same and being surprised when they don't, was racism. Well, if you'd like to weigh in on any of this, our call-in number 1-888-344-1170. You can also reach me at questions@bobsiegel.net or on Facebook or on Twitter. Regarding my comments on Harry Reid, Renee says whenever he opens his mouth, you should be able to see a foot sticking out of it. Regarding the judge who wouldn't sentence a man who raped his wife, Pat says that judge is trying to protect illegal abusive behavior. Would the judge excuse animal or human sacrifices or other atrocities committed in the name of religion because of a defendant's sincere belief system? The illegal door he is trying to prop open needs to be nailed shut. You said it, Pat. We'll take more of your comments and then move on to some of your Bible questions when we return to the Bob Siegel Show. This is Bob Siegel. They say a man's home is his castle. So when it comes to the wiring of your house, you don't want to mess around with some unknown electrician. Instead, do what I did. Call W&S Electric Incorporated. W&S specializes in both contracting and repair. From troubleshooting to remodeling to circuit breakers and fuses, W&S takes a skilled but personal interest in your home at affordable rates. I know the owner, Wayne Klingenhofer, personally, and I can testify firsthand to his integrity. Call 619-447-8785. That's 447-8785 for W&S Electric Incorporated, license number 480539, W&S Electric. Welcome back to the Bob Siegel Show. I'm reading some comments regarding my comments about this judge who let a man go, refused to even issue a restraining order, even though it was openly admitted that he sexually abused and beat his wife, I should add. Maureen Coddington, who writes this often on Facebook, writes, "The woman was sexually abused and forced to have sex. Judge Joseph Charles, in denying the restraining order to the woman after her divorce, ruled that her ex-husband felt he had behaved according to his Muslim beliefs and that he did not have a criminal desire to or intent to sexually assault his wife." According to the court record, the man's wife, a Moroccan woman who had recently immigrated to the U.S. at the time of the attacks, alleged defendant forced plaintiff to have sex with him while she cried. Plaintiff testified that defendant always told her, "This is according to our religion. You are my wife. I can do anything to you. The woman, she should submit and do anything I ask her to do." Maureen also says, check out and Google Muslim Brotherhood, the project. Their goal is to take over the West and install Sharia law. This case is the beginning. As we've mentioned Muslim Brotherhood before, Maureen, and I am going to explore that in more detail on this program. Thank you for your comments. Now, regarding the comments I made on last week's radio show about Kerry blaming things on George Bush, Maureen Chambers, our other Maureen, writes, "I can do nothing but laugh at this. Awesome job. You want to make sure your comment gets read over the air? Tell me I did an awesome job like Maureen, and you too can have your comment read over the radio. If you don't like what I said, well, I'll think about it." No, actually, the most critical stuff I put first. I just don't happen to have any today. Anyway, this is from Mark in El Cajon. "Hey, Bob, regarding Bush's speech mannerism versus oblablas, Mark, if you have... It's been a while since we've read one of Mark's comments. He loves to call Obama oh blah blah versus, and it cracks me up every time. I haven't gotten tired of this. Versus oh blah blahs. Most liberals in their speeches are eloquent but lack any substance at all. Bush was not eloquent, but his speeches contained substance and were to the point. I have a classic real-life example to tell you about. I actually met candidate Bill Clinton in April 1992. He wasn't even nominated as the Democratic presidential candidate yet. He came to El Cajon. Can you imagine that, Clinton? I wonder what the girls look like in El Cajon. Anyway, he came to El Cajon and made a speech near the City Hall building. Even though I am a Republican, I still thought it would be an experience to hear the other side. There was only about 30 or so people there on a fine spring day gathering around a lecture podium. Clinton was late in getting there, but once there, he made a speech saying things like, trickle-down economics doesn't work. It's all Reagan and Bush's fault, etc. Then after the speech, he went into the crowd and took questions personally and directly from ordinary citizens," continuing to read this letter from Mark in El Cajon. Mark goes on and says, "I got right up to him and shook his hand. And then I said to him, 'You say trickle-down economics doesn't work. Well, I'm a general contractor here in this area. And when I start a job that is too large for me to handle by myself, then I have to hire several employees to help me finish it. Now, when the homeowner pays me and then I buy materials for the job and then I pay my employees and they go out and buy goods and services, etc., isn't that trickle-down economics?' Clinton stood there and without batting an eye, then looked me straight in the eye and started talking to me in a very friendly and engaging tone of voice. He talked for about 2 or 3 minutes. All the while, I listened and nodded my head as if to say, 'Oh, okay.' He then turned to someone else in the crowd and started talking to them. I then looked down and thought to myself, 'Geez, he talked to me for a few minutes, but what the heck did he say?' To this day, I can't remember anything of substance," he said. "Yes, Bill Clinton is one of the best speakers I've ever heard, but it's all fluff. Oh, blah, blah is a very good speaker, but he's all fluff too. No substance at all. Unfortunately, TV has transformed the presidency into a personality sound bite. The Republican I like now and who has a lot of substance and also has a very good delivery is Newt Gingrich. He's about as Reagan-esque as anyone can be, except, of course, the Gipper himself, our last truly great president. Sincerely, Mark." Well, good letter, Mark. Unfortunately, Newt Gingrich is unelectable. The media just pillaged his reputation. I think he'd be a good president, too, but he's unelectable. We'll be right back.
If you enjoy listening to The Bob Siegel Show, check out Bob's daily blog on townhall.com. Bob is also a regular contributor for San Diego Rostra and San Diego Newsroom. And don't forget his website, www.bobsiegel.net. Here, you download past radio shows, read Bob's many articles about Christianity, and get information about Bob's books. That's www.bobsiegel.net. BobSiegel.net.
This is Bob Siegel inviting you to tune in for the Rick Amato Show 4 nights a week here on 1170 KCBQ. Rick stays on top of the issues, local and national. He also does some of the most stimulating interviews you've ever heard. That's the Rick Amato Show, Monday through Thursdays from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. here on Intelligent Talk 1170, KCBQ. You can also find Rick on AmatoTalk.com. Welcome back to our program. Going through some of your emails, this is from Diana in El Cajon with a Bible question or Christianity question. My nephew was attending a Lutheran school, and now that he is entering high school, he will be attending Cathedral in the North County. When he goes to church with his family on Sundays, they attend a non-denominational church. Won't he be confused on what denomination of Christian he is? His parents want the best education, but that means different schools. Well, that's an interesting question, Diana, and I appreciate it. I believe it is important for parents to stress the name Christian rather than any particular denomination. If your nephew is going to more than one church, this could help to model the idea that Christians worship in a variety of ways, but the important beliefs, such as the nature and identity and salvation of Jesus, are shared by all. In other words, help kids understand that denominations are not a sign of diversity, but rather unity in diversity. This is also from Diana in El Cajon. She says, I was listening to a radio show last week, and they were saying that Walmart wants or is going to put tags on their merchandise that will tell them who is buying it and other personal information that no tag has had so far. They will be the first to use it. They were urging people to call Walmart and tell them that they do not want it. The church I grew up going to in the late 60s had a series on the end times. It warned of progress like this and said that people will have to have chips implanted in them with their personal information to do almost everything in their everyday lives. Christians were told not to get this chip implanted. It also spoke of a one world order. Now the Frito-Lay company, who also owns Pepsi Company and others, has in their workrooms a poster stating one world order. I believe technology is moving so fast that we are living in the end times. I think I will be in my 80s when it does happen, but I think we are going headlong in that direction. What do you think? I'm also worried about what happens to young people who are in that time period but have not turned their life to Christ. I have met many people who have become Christians later in their lives. What happens to those who won't have a chance to turn their lives around since some people take years to believe in Jesus as their personal Savior? Here's a personal story that made me think of that question. And then Diane continues with this story. She says, I knew a man who came from a very large family. He was not supervised well while growing up. He started to use drugs at a young age and would also steal cars and break into people's homes. This lasted for all his teen years and into his late 30s. Sometime in his 40s, he became a Christian and later a minister. If he would have died during his bad times, when I know he would have told God he wasn't interested in anything that had to do with the Bible, would he still have gone to heaven because God knew down the road he was going to turn his life around? Will that be the same thing when Jesus returns and some people have yet to give their lives to Christ? Very good question, Diana. Let me say, first of all, since you had a lot of stuff in there, the big brother invasion from technology and one world government movements do concern me. We may indeed be the last generation before the return of Jesus, but according to Scripture, we can never know that for certain until an event known as the Abomination of Desolation, when the Jewish temple is rebuilt and the Antichrist sits upon a throne in the Holy of Holies, claiming to be God. Until that happened, Jesus said, no one knows the day or the hour. He said that clearly in Matthew 24. As for this man who became a Christian late in life, what strikes me immediately is that God did keep him alive long enough to get saved. Whether people die at a young age or an old age, whether Jesus returns early or late in a person's life, God will allow sufficient time to repent. In cases of people who somehow died without hearing the message, the Bible is not clear how God will judge them, but there do seem to be some clues. I believe God will take sincere ignorance into consideration, and I base that on Acts 17. And I believe God can look into a person's conscience and heart, evaluating them according to what he knows they would have done if they had heard. Now, regarding these comments about the end times and God taking ignorance into account, Nils in Spring Valley says, interesting comments. I especially like your end time one and agree with you fully. I want to especially congratulate you on becoming a universalist. Now, Nils writes us from time to time, he is a universalist. If you're not familiar with that word, it's a person who doesn't believe God will send anybody to hell or there's variation. Some believe that some will go to hell for a while, and then they'll learn their lesson and they'll be let out. But God will not have people in hell for all of eternity. So Nils is claiming that based on what I said about God taking sincere ignorance into account, he wants to congratulate me for becoming a universalist. Well, I didn't really become a universalist, but here's why Nils says I did. He says, you said sincere ignorance may be an acceptable reason for not believing. Paul said the same thing at 1 Timothy 1:13 about his miraculous conversion. Don't you think that anyone would choose anything else compared to everlasting life in God's company? Don't you believe that they're sincerely ignorant like Paul? Either they didn't believe the threat they faced or didn't understand the message or were deceived like Eve by the devil. I have always speculated about what Adam would say if just before he died, someone asked him, would you do it all over again knowing then what you know now? I remember your joke about the fellow at the pearly gates being asked, are you a believer? He said, I am now. Good joke, Nils. I didn't tell that one. I don't know where you heard it, but it wasn't me. Can't claim it. He says, that means he must not have believed beforehand because the message he heard lacked something. What point would God make for himself or anyone else by sending such a person to hell? I know you are not a universalist, but you think like one regarding issues of fairness. I'll continue with Nils' question when we return.
If you enjoy listening to The Bob Siegel Show, check out Bob's daily blog on townhall.com. Bob is also a regular contributor for San Diego Rostra and San Diego Newsroom. And don't forget his website, www.bobsiegel.net. Here, you download past radio shows, read Bob's many articles about Christianity, and get information about Bob's books. That's www.bobsiegel.net. BobSiegel.net.
This is Bob Siegel inviting you to tune in for the Rick Amato Show four nights a week here on 1170 KCBQ. Rick stays on top of the issues local and national. He also does some of the most stimulating interviews you've ever heard. That's the Rick Amato Show, Monday through Thursdays from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. here on Intelligent Talk 1170 KCBQ. You can also find Rick on AmatoTalk.com. Welcome back to our program. I was reading a letter from Nils, a universalist, one who doesn't believe that God will send people to hell, at least not for all of eternity. And he's raising the question, let me paraphrase back a little of what he said, that if somebody dies and discovers there is a God, why wouldn't they be willing to take a second chance? Knowing that there's a hell, wouldn't they reform? He says, what point would God make for himself or anyone else by sending such a person to hell? I know you're not a universalist, but you think like one regarding issues of fairness. We just differ on how fair we think God is going to be. Well, thanks for the letter, Nils. And yeah, we do agree that God is fair, but we come to different conclusions, of course. What people are choosing is not heaven or hell. What they're really choosing is to live with or without sin. You're talking as if they're choosing to live with or without the consequences of sin. Now, let's use an illustration from our own court and prison and society system. How many repeat offenders have gone in and out of prison? They know what it's like. Prison's a horrific place. Yet they get let out and they choose to commit crimes aware of the consequences of their decision. It's the same with God's ultimate consequence of hell. Nobody wants to go to hell, but some people just love their sin that much. And while sinning, people don't take the time usually to think about consequences. Sure, if God offered them a second chance, they would take it, but I'm convinced that after this second chance, the opportunity to sin would come up again, and they would be like our criminal repeat offenders. But I always enjoy hearing from you, Nils. Well, 2 weeks ago, I started a discussion on forgiveness. I did not conclude it last week, so I invited you to forgive me. And I told you that you got an extra week of not having to forgive your friends because you hadn't learned how. So here's a passage that I read. Let me read it to you again because I think Christians have a big misunderstanding about forgiveness. We think we're just supposed to forgive anybody. Actually, we're supposed to forgive people who repent, people who ask for forgiveness. Now, you think I'm just blowing smoke? Luke 17, if your brother sins, rebuke him. If he repents, forgive him. If he repents, forgive him. Now, the greatest example of forgiveness is God himself. Let me ask you a few bonehead questions, or at least bonehead for Christians or anyone who's studied theology for a long time. Will everybody be in heaven? No, only those who receive Christ, or more specifically put, only those who accept God's forgiveness. The person in hell for all of eternity does not feel forgiven, and in point of fact, is not forgiven. Yes, he could have been forgiven. Yes, God wanted to forgive him. Yes, Jesus died for his sins, but not all sins. The sin of refusing to accept Jesus, the sin of rejecting God's forgiveness, was not paid for. In similar manner, our friends or families are forgiven by us when they ask for forgiveness. My dad disowned me for becoming a Christian. Any anger held toward my dad was eventually dealt with, and I did have a genuine desire to forgive him. I could even picture in my mind what it would be like, but my dad never asked my forgiveness and passed away separated from his son. My mother is still alive. She had gone along with Dad's decision to disown me because she was afraid to confront him. After Dad passed away, my mother expressed regret over all that went on over the years. It has been a joy and privilege to forgive my mother. And in her case, she was able to experience my forgiveness because she wanted forgiveness. So far, it's been helpful to compare the healing of a human relationship to the healing of a God-human relationship. But there's also an important difference. God alone has a right to offer forgiveness to all who will receive it because all have sinned against God. It is not the same with me. Not all humans have sinned against me. Some humans have sinned against me. It is not incumbent upon me to forgive somebody for what they did to a third party. That, quite simply, is none of my business. Oh, sure, I could tell this person that God forgives them, but if they have wronged another individual, the two of them must settle things themselves. Oftentimes when some murderer is on death row, I'll hear Christians call in the talk shows saying that we must forgive the man. Excuse me, but the only individuals in a position to forgive are the families of the victims. And in those cases, whether or not they extend forgiveness depends upon whether or not the murderer has owned up to what he has done and asked for forgiveness. Should they forgive him if he repents? Yes. Should they harbor bitterness in their hearts if he does not repent? No. Nevertheless, if the murderer has not asked the family to forgive what he did to their loved one, then they have not forgiven him. Neither should they be encouraged to. Likewise, when Muslims go around with signs claiming the Holocaust never happened, or rulers like Ahmadinejad brag about how they will sponsor a new Holocaust, it is a gross misrepresentation of justice when Christians jump in to quickly offer forgiveness. Let the Jews decide for themselves if they wish to forgive some Holocaust denier or instigator. Christians may forgive those who speak and fight against Christians. Even so, in Revelation 19, we see Christians rejoicing over the destruction of those who murdered God's servants, people who chose not to repent and to continue with their evil. True, I would love to see everyone turn from their sins someday, but many will not. Nevertheless, I can celebrate when a wicked man dies because he's no longer going to be able to hurt anyone else, and because justice has finally been done. Yes, he could have known mercy, but if he rejects mercy, I'm still grateful to see justice. So let me sum up what I was saying today and on our previous show. Speaking out against evil does not mean we are unwilling to forgive evil, but speaking out against evil and working to stop evil are also a part of the gospel. We are to forgive sin when the sinner asks for forgiveness. This is the way God handles it. Finally, even if one does not ask for forgiveness, we are to potentially forgive them and carry forgiveness in our hearts rather than bitterness. Now, I know that for many of my Christian brothers and sisters, this was a whole new way of looking at things. I ask you to open your minds, consider what I am saying, and bottom line, if you do not feel I'm being biblical, go with the Bible. If I should turn out to be wrong, heck, just forgive me. Well, here's another email question, or it's actually more of a comment, responding to what I said earlier about church denominations. Keith says, "Dear Mr. Siegel, for years, this was the Sunday routine to which my family adhered. Dad would wake us up quite early, throw us in the car, and drive us to Catholic Mass. When we arrived home, Mom would have breakfast on the table. We'd sit down and eat, then pile back in the same car and be driven by our mom to the local Methodist church for Sunday school and worship services. Had the story ended there, we would have been just fine, but meddlesome, bigoted relatives couldn't wait to make disparaging comments about the other denomination, complete with threats of fire and brimstone. The effects of such hate speech on small children was predictable. My older siblings were turned off from all religion and never returned. I dabbled in the Catholic faith until I could no longer reconcile the birth control equals abortion argument collided with the institutionalized protection of pedophile priests. My family and I are now happily active in our local Methodist church, not because of the denomination, with which I have many disagreements, women and gay rights in particular, but because of an extraordinary congregation which understands that Christian is a verb first and a noun second. Sincerely, Keith." Well, thank you for that valuable comment, Keith, and I can certainly understand how one with that background would get turned off. And I'm glad that you were eventually able to return to Christianity. For what it's worth, my own people, the Jews, have been murdered in the name of Christianity. Fortunately, I learned the difference between the honest teachings of Jesus and the way he is infrequently represented. Let me tell you about next week's show. As you know, Maxine Waters has been in the news. Bruce Brown is running against her in the 35th District. Bruce Brown will be our guest on next week's Bob Siegel Show. I hope you'll be there. You are always welcome. Your questions are welcome too.
Bob Siegel Show on KCBQ is sponsored by Bob Siegel.
Intelligent talk, 1170 KCBQ, San Diego. And worldwide at KCBQ.com.